Hi, welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We're coming to you live from Fresno from the Elbow Room, a long-time establishment here in Fresno, one of the finest places to eat, and we really appreciate their hospitality today. So today is an honor and a privilege for me to interview someone that has been interviewing me for many, many years, nearly a decade and a half. But his name is Ray Appleton. He's the voice of the Valley. And what we always try to do on this show, Ray, is we try to bring a little Valley flavor to a national and statewide audience talking about national and state issues and sometimes Valley issues.
Just like what I do every day.
So we're really glad to have you. One of the things I thought that would be interesting for our listeners is that you made an interesting change. You were kind of a rock and roll guy, a DJ.
Look at me, I still am. I mean, yeah.
A DJ, a guy who was, I'm not going to say liberal, but more moderate, probably a Democrat.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was a Democrat. Right.
And you made the change. You started in the 80s with Reagan, slowly making a change, and then got into the talk radio business. And now you really are one of the conservative voices, not only in the Valley, but all over the state of California, with one of the largest radio stations, KMJ, one of the old World War One legacy stations that we have here in California.
1922, we went on the air. Yeah.
So walk us through, walk our listeners through how you made that conversion, how you started.
Well, I mean, I'm a child of the 60s for sure. I'm, I may not look it, but I'm almost 70. And even though I was from that culture and still maintain a little bit of that, I'm still very much into music. I'm still a musician. I was always a law and order guy. I was always pro-military. And everything else was, from that genre. And that era. And the Democrat thing is because everybody in California was a Democrat. My family were Democrats. But the Democrats back then, you have to remember, I mean, Jack Kennedy, as we affectionately called him, he hated taxes. He hated welfare. He was very strong in the military. And that certainly is not the Democratic Party now. But I began my, and this is where I really developed a respect for the military, even though things back then were very, anti-Vietnam, anti-military. I began my radio career as a volunteer with the Veterans Hospitals of California. They had a closed-circuit radio station that went out to all of them. And all the cats coming back from Vietnam, as messed up and injured as they were, I saw some horrific injuries, would bring records to me at the Fresno Hospital. This is my favorite, man. You got to play this. New Beatles album, new Stones album. I bring my own collection in. And I would just be rock and roll disc jockey for about two-thirds of the veterans' hospitals in California. And it's from, I was only 16. And from that, I developed a real affection for the people in the military, and I wasn't one of these anti-Vietnam War guys, even though I, nobody likes war.
Right.
But, and that started a little bit of an early evolution. And, just like as we all grow and make more money and pay more in taxes, I just became a little bit more politically conservative. The day that this is a great story, that I re-registered as a Democrat, even though I've been voting Republican for a good 8, 9, 10 years, is Haley Barbour, who was the
you registered as a Republican.
Yeah, on the air. Republican. Bill Jones brought in Haley Barbour, who at the time was the head of the RNC.
And Bill Jones was the former Secretary of State of California.
Right. Bill's been an old friend. Yep. And they brought in the registration form to re-register me as a Republican, plus a letter from George H.W. Bush saying, you've been on the other side for so damn long, blah, blah. It's time for you, and I want you to do this on the air. Affectionately, President, George H.W. Bush. And I was just like, and Haley Barbour, from Mississippi. Now, you got to do this right now. And I want, your audience is huge. You talk to a couple million people a day, which I do, and ego. And, and I did on the air. And ever since then, I've been a registered Republican. This was probably 1990. It was pre-Clinton. So, about 1990. Mm-hmm.
And so take us back just a little bit. So, sure. I mean, you've been at KMJ now for over 30 years.
Oh, yeah, almost 31.
31 years coming up in October, I know. But take us back to, you started at 16.
Yeah.
Working your butt off, doing, coming up School of Hard Knocks, working for a living, going to the veterans' places, being a DJ.
Yeah.
But I know you also, you were in music, and then you did a short time over in London, right?
Well, that's where I converted to talk radio. When I left the rock business here, and I was really disgruntled with the American way of doing radio all of a sudden to become very formatted. There was a consultant for everything, you know, and I said, no, I'm going to Britain. When I'd been there a lot, and I had friends there where things were about 10, 20 years behind us. And there's a lot of talk, even about current events and politics, to this day with the disc jockeys, when they're playing like heavy metal. They're still required to be very up on things. And the two stations I work for required me to be a disc jockey at night and a talk show guy during the day. I had a split shift. And it was there, working for UK Radio Live, Capital Radio on the weekends, I developed a real affinity for talk radio, because there were no consultants, there was no format, and I could do what I wanted. I just had to do it with my mouth, you know, rather than playing the records I wanted back in the early days.
You had to stay up on issues, local issues, national,
international
issues.
They basically brought me on as an American to talk about American politics from a British point of view, how it would affect the British public. You know, and then I had to get up to speed on all of their stuff, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll tell you a funny story very quickly. I used to go back almost on a yearly basis and substitute for the guy that took my place. He was a New Zealander, and he would go home to New Zealand. And one of the times corresponded with an invitation that Mike Reynolds, who was the father of Three Strikes and You're Out, turned down. They wanted somebody to come over and help them write their own Three Strikes law, which became ultimately a Two Strikes law that even pertained to child molesters and pedophiles and all that. And that was, I was really honored to do that. House of Lords first, then into the House of Commons to get it passed. So my name is on the one of seven names on Britain's two-strike laws, which is still in effect today. But I went on the air and talked about it at the station that I used to work for, and they were hip to three strikes by then. And they thought that was the most god-awful, draconian, terrible. How can you steal a piece of pizza and go to prison for the rest of your life? And I'm trying to explain this, and oh, God, they hated me. And I've never been back to that station again. They just did not want to deal with Ray Appleton anymore. When they found out I was hands-on involved in the creation of Three Strikes with Mike and Bill Jones and Congressman Costa and Dan Lundgren, the old Attorney General, and Pete Wilson, our governor, even got involved. All of that off the record at the time because they weren't supposed to be doing any of that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, good story.
So you come back.
Yeah.
You start up in, what, 1987?
Supposed to be. I was going to go back to England. My mother was ill. I said, I'm going to go back to the States for 6 months. And 31 years later, I'm still at the damn radio station, you know.
Every day you started doing it, you were doing morning. You had a morning show.
Well,
the morning news.
It's always been a split shift, yeah, until recently, where I would do the morning hosting, and then I would come back and do my own show.
Okay. So let's get to – so Ray has been involved in – you've watched California go from – like you talked about, conservative Democrats and Republicans. You had Jerry Brown's father, and then you went to Ronald Reagan. Then you had a series of Republican governors.
Yeah.
Now we've seen a collapse and a movement to the hard left.
Yeah.
To where now we're talking about banning plastic straws here in the state of California.
Real, real big priority, folks.
So as you see things that are changing here, Ray, here in the state of California, and here in the San Joaquin Valley, we're kind of the last kind of more conservative area left in the state. Where do you think this goes from here? Do you think that we ever have a turnaround? I mean, you know what they've done to our laws here and on water and the way they've taken away and all these things.
It's going to take a while, but here's what's going to happen. You know, there's this exodus of people from California, middle and upper class. It's that some people that have some money. They don't want the regulation, the taxes anymore. So they're taking their jobs, their employees, their concepts out of California and moving elsewhere. Mm-hmm. That's going to snowball to the point where you're going to have a criminal element and you're going to have an entitlement element left in California. And it's ultimately going to get to the point where the entitlement element is so getting so sick of being preyed on by the criminal element, they'll all become conservatives. I'm thinking out of the box here. And they'll finally get rid of that whole, you know, genre, that huge, giant leftist cloud that's been over the state for decades.
And do you think we have to get to a point where things crash?
I think that's what bothers me. In California, absolutely have to break and go to hell before we'll change.
Well,
I hate to say that. That's
a little
concerning. I was born here, you know. I hate to say that.
Right.
Yeah.
But you think that's where it's going?
No, it's where it's going.
Yeah.
It's not getting any better. You know, I mean, every time I turn around, there's something that, you know, and the next governor, Gavin Newsom, more than likely, that guy's the Antichrist. I mean, I don't, you know, the only thing that's appealing about him is his telegenic appearance, and the ladies love him because he's a real studly looking guy. And this, I mean, on the air, he did this huge mutation with me. He was very much pro water, pro let's build the dams and reservoirs, you know, which is very anti-Democrat. He hated the high-speed rail crisis that we're going through. Mm-hmm. He says if he's governor, he's going to torpedo that right away. And then he got a call from Jerry Brown, and, oh, he flipped the other direction so fast.
Right. Now he's opposing water storage. They want to take more of our water and dump it out to the ocean. And for those listeners on the national audience, you've heard our earlier podcast on water. But water is what makes this agriculture heartland, this agricultural mecca, bloom.
Totally.
It's, you know, the largest agricultural area in the world.
And then there's high-speed rail boondoggle that's, you know, started off at $38 million. It's going to cost us $200 million for a train that's never going to be built and truly was never high-speed rail in the first place. He just eviscerated that on the air, you know, tore it all to pieces. And then 2 weeks later, it's like he's a different person.
And we're going to have the high-speed rail, we're going to have a $10 billion cost for about 100 miles between Fresno, where we're sitting at today, and Bakersfield in the south. And it's going to end up being a really expensive Amtrak rail is what it's
going to happen. Yeah, because everything, it won't happen, and everything will be deeded to Amtrak, which is already in the works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible. And imagine a politician changing his stripes.
I mean, he did dramatically. I bring it up all the time, but that's not going to change the outcome here in California.
I will say, though, that that John Cox doesn't have a lot of money. He's a Republican candidate running. He's trying hard. He's trying hard. He's out there. He's making
really,
the rounds.
He's really a different guy. Yeah. I like him a lot. I've grown to like him. In the beginning, I thought, guy's a little kind of a screwball. But now I get exactly where he's coming from. He's very Trumpish. He's a business guy and just states what's on his mind.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's doing okay in the polls. I mean, he's not ahead, but he's doing okay. He's doing better than we've done in the past with the last gubernatorial race when Jerry Brown was on.
I'll tell you one governor that I just really loved, although I had a lot of respect for Pete Wilson, and I got to know him very well. But I loved Governor Duke Majan, just a sweet, sweet man who he really was one of those old politicians that really wanted to serve, really wanted to do it for the people, and then get the hell out. He believed that, you know, you go in and you do it, and then you go back to whatever it was you were doing. Very old school, and he was a wonderful man.
And one of our best governors.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, going back to your career, you've been doing it for 30 years.
At KMJ. I've been in the business for 50 years.
11 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day.
Yeah.
So walk us through how you decide you're going to put a show together. Like, how does that develop? Because 3 hours is a lot of time on the radio. You got to be able to talk and come up with new guests and new issues. So how do you go about putting
it? I would submit that practically every radio talk show in the country pre-plans, books guests, knows what their issues are going to be the next day. And I started very early on from my first day at KMJ not planning anything. I called it radio by the seat of your pants, where I want to be as current as humanly possible. So we start planning early in the morning, same day. I mean, rarely do I have guests, you know that, unless it's somebody like you. I try to keep the guests very important, because to me the most important guests are the audience, the radio audience. But I've had three presidents on, and I've had every governor on, I've had Governor Brown on too, twice. I forgot about that. The only president I've not had on since I've been there has been Obama, obviously. But I just get together with my producer, and I start planning the day at about 8:30, and it's just a crash course on everything to get it done by 11 o'clock. And typically, we don't have the show produced and ready to roll until about 10:55. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes to go.
And it can always change based on late breaking news, right?
That's why I don't pre-book anything, just in case the world blows up. I want to be able to cover it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's worked out beautifully.
And you take callers?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But for a while, not now, mine was, and I'll brag a little bit here, mine was the number one local origination radio talk show in the country for about, I think it was, I'm going to do the math in my head, It was 9 years in a row. So, I mean, that's wonderful stuff.
Well, I think
it was tough to live up to.
I think those are fake numbers because I think you're still the number one local show. And largely because you're good, okay?
Thank you.
But also because the KMJ has such a reach. So, I mean, this station, it's an old World War One legacy communications tower.
And it's AM and FM, so it's a combined 100,000 watts. Mm-hmm. The only place that we don't get into in California because of the Tehachapis is L.A. That's it.
Right.
But everybody else all the way up to Oregon.
The whole valley all the way to Oregon, to the West Coast.
Calls from Eugene, Oregon, like they're local, you know. So.
Right. And you also have a lot of listeners online now, too. I was on the show Friday, and some guy called from Tennessee.
Yeah. And those are those people I was talking about that are leaving California.
Yes.
But they're able, because of the internet, to take the radio station with them. You know, once in a while, when I tweet something that I'm going to be doing, like when I have you on, it's always when I have you on, I'll go to Twitter, and here's all these old, pardon my language, farts from New York and the East Coast that hate you, that have no idea about my show or any of that. And they'll put it on, they'll tweet it, I'm going to be on Ray Appleton's show to talk to that bastard Devin Nunes, make sure you listen. But they either don't call, or they're so obscene when they call, we don't put them on, or they're drunk.
Right.
But yeah, the occasional non-California, non-KMJ type, and it's usually with you, to be honest.
I have a lot of friends all over the nation.
Oh,
now,
don't
right?
you? Yeah.
You know, I was just, I just spoke at an event for the Nevada Republican Party over in Gardnerville, so near just south of Reno.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was amazing. There was probably a couple thousand people there, and I was the keynote speaker. And afterwards, I went, and there was a line of people that were waited there, and they wanted to talk to me and take a picture. And I will tell you, I bet half of the people that I spoke to are people who left California, who are now living over outside of Reno, and they're there. They miss California, but they don't miss the government. They don't miss the rules and the regulations, and they're sad to see what's happening in California.
Easily 3-5% of my calls every day are people that have left, you know, and that scares me a little bit because that reduces my local audience somewhat. But what's that, you know, just as we talked about California, what's that economically going to do to California?
Right.
Because a lot of them say, I closed my business and had to fire 3 people, 30 people, 300 people, or I took them with me.
Right.
You know? So that's all a drain on our economy.
So let me bring it back. So we'll close out of politics. But I want to, you have a lot of fans out there that will be able to listen to this podcast. So let me just ask you a couple just personal questions.
Sure.
3 children.
One's deceased.
One passed away. You have a new grand.
I have two grandchildren.
One new one, baby.
One is 19, and the other is 8 months old.
All good.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you babysit?
Not yet.
They don't let you babysit.
Not yet. Kid hates me. Looks at me and just totally freaks out. Yeah.
Is it the voice or the hair or what is it?
I think it's the voice, a low voice. My granddaughter was the same way. My daughter was always like, talk like a girl. Talk like a baby, you know, and then all of a sudden the kid would shine and all that. Mm-hmm. Interesting note, you know, our big enemy is McClatchy Publications and locally the newspaper, where my son is the political writer. So go figure that one out.
Right. Well, KMJ is obviously in direct competition with the other media outlets
for sure.
Yeah. So you talked about the military. Talk about your involvement with the, I'm going to screw up the name, but the Doolittle group that airplane that you've helped to restore. It's an old B-17?
B-25. For years, I've been up on military history, and I've been a real restoration freak. And a friend of mine who owns the last standing Army Air Training Base from World War II, can you imagine owning that? And what a historical thing.
And the location is here near Fresno.
Yeah. He called me up, and he says the 50th anniversary of Doolittle's raid over Tokyo is coming up, you know, when he was able to take off the carrier and bomb Tokyo early in the war and really cause some great psychological damage, Jimmy Doolittle. And he goes, we want to reenact that. And I thought, what the hell are we going to do, bomb Tokyo? But he wanted to assemble a group of B-25s and take off a carrier, which had not been done since Doolittle did it. So we got our group of 4 B-25s together. We trained. We were training down in North Island, San Diego, a military installation there. Mm-hmm. And not only did we want to take off from a carrier, in this case, the USS Ranger, which has since been decommissioned, but we wanted to do it in the same amount of space that they had, which was 600 feet, which is not a lot to take a bomber off a plane, even though the runway on the Ranger was 2,500 feet. So we practice all these takeoffs and touchdown at 600 feet. I mean, you're pulling G's like there's no tomorrow. And then we did it. We did it in 1992 for the 50th anniversary with all of the surviving Doolittle Raiders
that were there
watching from the observation deck, right, you know, and saluting. And it was so cool.
And that plane is still out. Can you see it online? Is there a website?
Yeah, it's called Executive Suite, the name of the plane.
Executive Suite.
Yeah. And the one that I'm closest to is one called Pacific Princess. But that day, I was in Executive Suite. And as a lot of people know, if they know their history, Doolittle had to take off early from the Hornet because he thought he'd been spotted. So that meant instead of landing in China, it was a suicide mission. They were all going to crash, you know. Mm-hmm. But they all followed him devoutly. And our plane caught on fire. And we had to be sent out over the ocean in case the fire was so bad we could splash down and maybe we might be saved, you know, rather than hitting ground. And we were only about 30 feet off the ocean, full out, with a couple of F-18s bird dogging us because we were in big trouble. So we finally got to Santa Barbara and we had to belly land it. So these old Raiders are like, "You did the whole thing! You crashed!" I mean, just like we did.
I did not know that story. So you actually crashed?
Yeah, we landed? Came down. It was a mess. It was terrifying.
Wow.
And then when they did, like, the autopsy on the plane, they estimated we were 8 seconds from completely flaming out because one motor caught on fire, and we didn't know it was burning across the fuel line to the other. And there was, like, an inch and a half left before we were toast.
Wow, that's a great story. I learned something new today. So scary. So another issue that is close to your heart. I've been to your house several times, and you have animals everywhere. Cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And I think the cool thing about you is not only do you spend your time to raise money for sheltering animals, mm-hmm. but you also spend time actually taking in animals.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's every day you're like, I mean, you're putting something on Facebook that says, "Oh, I lost my cat Tigger today." And makes you tick with that? I mean, you love these animals so much.
I'm an only child, and my mother worked all day, so I wanted company when I was a kid, so I just started accumulating little furry and feathered friends, and that led me to become a zoology major in school, which I never completed. The zoo director at the time locally, the park superintendent lived behind us. The zoo director was part-time. His name was Paul Chaffee, and he was my personal veterinarian for all my little pets. Mm-hmm. Lived down the street. In fact, he dated my mother for a while, but nobody knows that.
They will now.
Yeah. And he introduced me to zoo animals. You know, I helped I was 14 years old, and I helped do a cesarean on a hippopotamus. You know how much fat you got to cut through to, anyway. And so that just led me to this whole animal thing. And I just feel sorry for unwanted animals. So it's like, come on, move in. I got room. I live alone, so I can do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what do you play? Talk about your music career. You have your own band, the Apple Tones.
Yeah. I've been a bass player all my life. I hadn't played publicly or in a band for about 25, 30 years. Big company called and said, and I was very familiar with them. They said, "We got a corporate gig coming up with Sammy Hagar. Why don't you put a band together and open?" And I went, "Are you kidding me?" And so I called some buddies who were all big 80s musicians. Their faces were all over MTV back in the hair days when everybody was like that. So they knew what they were doing. And we put this band together, which was supposed to be for a one-shot. This was 5 years ago. And that gig never materialized. They canceled it. So we finally said, "Well, we're going to play one time. So we opened for the Beach Boys. And they loved us. So they grabbed us, and we did some work with them. So ever since then, we don't play that often. We don't do bars. We don't do clubs. we only open for larger acts. So we've done a lot of work with Cheap Trick and you know, groups like that, and I'm still doing it. And
still going.
Kind of the way I look, the way I do. And I love it. It's my release, you know. Mm-hmm. The weird thing about it is, in 2015, I had a stroke. And they said, you're never going to talk again. You're not going to walk right. You better find another career. And along with the stroke, I totally lost my ability to play anything. So I had to learn all over again.
Are you better now?
Oh, well, no, I'm not better than I was. I was very good. And I've not come back up to that speed. But playing again with my guys who were very knew my situation, were very tolerant as I relearned, has helped me immensely. Mm-hmm. So I'm about 70% back.
Yeah. So, Ray, if this podcast sucks, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Because you taught me everything I know about radio. I can't imagine what I was like when I was first running for office coming on your show. But I really appreciate all that you've done, not only for the Valley, but the way that you represent the Valley, you're fair, and you just do a hell of a job fighting for Valley issues, whether it's on water or the other issues that we deal with here in this state, but also just your love of animals, your love of music, your love of the military. It's just an honor to be your friend and
well,
a privilege
I mean,
to be your friend.
Ditto. I mean, you're doing so much. You've been a fabulous representative. And what you're going through now is complete BS.
Well,
it's horrible.
But I sign up for it, so you can't feel sorry for me.
Well, I get a lot of the same too. Not as much as you do now, but a lot of people, you know, what I talk about every day, and because of my relationship with you, they hate my guts. So I hear, you know, about as much as
well,
you.
Well, where is a badge of honor? Where is a badge of honor?
Where is it?
Wear it
oh,
as
yeah.
a badge of honor.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This is Devin Nunes coming to you live from the Elbow Room in Fresno, California, with the voice of the Valley, Ray Appleton. We'll see you next time.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We, the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn. Freedom marches on. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith. We kept our American. Ah, we kept.
paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.